Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, an admin, administrative assistant, administer, and I love films. As Alfred Lord Tennyson once said, "O Earth, what changes hast thou seen? From silent films to sound, from black and white to colour, from stop motion to CGI, what stories you must know est about Avatar, The Way of Water? What say you?" Wow. Nice. Every week I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Sharon Stone, Mark Frost, and even Cleddy Plambles. But this week, it's the incredible comedian and all-rounder, it's Chloe Petz. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets, beginnings, endings, and a video, uncut, ad-free, the whole thing. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Chloe Petz, come on. If you don't know Chloe Petz, Chloe Petz is one of the funniest comedians working today. She's about to go on tour, or she is on tour, or she's about to go on tour. I think her tour is about to start. Either way, you should go and see her on tour because she is brilliant. All you've got to do is look her up. You'll see all the amazing reviews. Everyone loves Chloe Petz. She's amazing. We recorded this on Zoom. Oh, we had a right old time. I think you're really going to love this one. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 225 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a stand-up, a footballer, a football fan of the second greatest team in the UK, a lol worder, a transient tourer, a hero, a legend, a podcaster, a writer, an actor, an MC, an award winner, and best of all, but certainly to listeners of this podcast, she has been trapped on tour for years now with our own Bready Brambles. Please welcome to the show. I can't believe he's let her out for the day. Please welcome. Here she is. It's Chloe Petz.
Woo! Well, yes, I am locked in a hotel room.
Yes, tell us all.
We've just been to the gym, me and Ed, and he was lifting very heavy weights, actually. I think he might have known that I was coming on this podcast, so he did extra heavy ones today so I could report back that he was doing really good stuff.
This is so great. So you are on tour with Bread Pambles, and you have been for a long time, and he has locked you in his hotel room and allowed you to do a podcast.
No, not his hotel room. I think we are doing some fictional stuff where we're taking the piss out of him, but I think saying that he's locked me in his hotel room would be taking it a bit too far, and maybe in the sort of direction that we shouldn't be spending.
Agreed to disagree. But anyway, how is it going?
It's honestly so fun. It's we've lost our minds. It feels lovely because I feel like him and Paul, the tour manager, are like my two brothers, and you can just be the worst version of yourself in front of them, which is really freeing. But we've only got a couple of weeks left of it, and I think we're probably ready for it to just about be over so we can sort of return to our lives and our loved ones. But I think it will be so sad because we have created this like little unit, which is, it's just such a laugh. And the gigs don't feel like work. They just feel like, you just go and have fun. It's great.
And then you'd start your own tour, right? Or have you started your tour?
Well, I did a mini tour sort of last spring, and then I'm doing another tour this spring.
Who do you take with you, or are you doing it on your own?
Me, myself, and I. I open for myself. I support myself.
Do you wear a different hat or something?
Yeah.
Do you do like a character at the top?
Hello, it's me, old...
Bowie Kletz.
Bowie Kletz. And yeah, I'm just smoking a cigar, sort of speaking truths about the world. Yeah.
How is this your first tour? Forgive me if it is not.
No, it is my first tour. But I would have forgiven you anyway.
Thank you. You're very forgiving. You're how do you find it? How is being on your own, going off and doing this stuff on your own now? Do you miss being with other people when you do it? Is it the best thing that's ever happened? Are you sad?
No, yeah. I'm sad for unrelated reasons. No, okay. It's really cool. I think I need to start remembering how cool it is and how like that's the sort of aim for stand-ups is you want to be off doing your own tour and people coming to see you. But I think it's just the like when you're sort of touring at my level, all of the gumph around it, you sort of have to do. So you have to turn up early, do your own sound check, do your own tech, all of this kind of stuff. But then it feels like once you've done all of that, the travel, the tech, the show is the reward. And that feels, you're just like not nervous for it anymore. You're just like, I just want to do the bit that I'm here to do. And I guess that's quite a freeing thing. But yeah, I think in the spring, I'll definitely make sure to take pressure off myself and just be like, this is meant to be fun. Stop putting pressure on it. Just have a laugh. And touring audiences are much more up for a big fun laugh than like an Edinburgh audience. An Edinburgh audience seems to want an arc, whereas a touring audience is just like, let's just do some big fart jokes.
That is so funny. I mean, any audience is better than an Edinburgh audience. Give us an arc. We're 40 minutes in. I don't feel we're on act two yet.
But I'm not doing that. I'm just doing funny jokes.
We didn't come to comedy for funny jokes, thank you. Why aren't we crying?
We came to be moved, thank you very much.
Jesus Christ.
It's still great. And then hopefully one day I'll get to the point where, you know, Greg Davies took Ed out on tour as his support. Ed's taken me out. Maybe one day I'll take, you know, the next burgeoning young thing out. I can look in my dressing room.
Who you got in mind?
Look in my dressing room?
Back of your head, you've already got someone in the chamber that you'd like to lock up in your dressing room and take on tour. Who is it?
Well, hopefully Florence Pugh will start doing stand-up and I can...
She's
no,
very
that got,
funny.
That got too creepy. Well, what no. I will say is... I think
agree to disagree again.
what I will say is I don't think the person that I'm going to take out on tour one day has even started stand-up. Is that a crazy claim?
Well, the only downside of that is that you're sort of suggesting that it'll take you so long to be able to take someone on you that it'll be at least 5 years. So it's a sort of newcomer who's got 5 years under their belt. So
you've
it says a lot about your belief.
Perfectly. Yeah. Well, I ain't going to be doing the size that the old egg scramble's been doing
for five
years.
What is this talk coming out of your mouth? Unacceptable.
Okay. I'll back myself. Dee Allen.
Yes.
She can come with me.
Tell me this. You are a football fan.
Yeah.
Your team?
Time. Crystal Palace. So you were saying the second best team. So is the first Richmond?
AFC Richmond. Okay. If we're talking real teams that you can play on FIFA, yes, sure. AFC Richmond. But in the Premier League, UK Premier League official, Tottenham.
Right.
But Crystal Palace always have a very special place in my heart because that is where we shot Ted Lasso. And I went on the pitch at Crystal Palace as the captain of AFC Richmond.
That's
and
so
it was one
cool.
of the greatest things I ever did in my whole life. And I loved them.
If I were you, I would not have been able to film that scene because I would have just been sobbing.
Yeah.
It Walking was... out as captain at Selhurst Park. Oh my
mate.
God.
It really was special. Tingles, boners. It was fucking great.
I'd get
There's
a boner.
No getting around it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, it's not sort of physiologically possible for me to get that. So I'd hire someone in to get a boner for me.
Now that is a good use of your money. what? I've just got one note that I made, which is that Ed Gamble, I forgot to do it in the intro. Ed Gamble, and I said, are you punking me? He said, I'm not punking you. She'll genuinely love it. He said, call her a rat.
Oh, yeah, we're little ratties. So,
okay.
Yeah, what happened with the rat chat is I kept saying the phrase, oh, that's, just because I thought it was quite a funny, fun little phrase to say. If something goes wrong, you go, oh, that's. And then I kept saying it so much that Paul, the tour manager, said, I really don't like that. I really don't like that voice. Well, when Paul, the tour manager, says he doesn't like something, that's sort of like, you know, a flame, a moth to
him.
A flame
that's
for Ed,
him.
Because yeah. Ed obviously then took rat and ran with it. He ran with a rat. And now, oh, honestly, I think it's quite wonderful in friendship groups to have sort of quite like a utilitarian word where, you know, if a punchline escapes you or a feeling escapes you, or you just sort of need a noun for something, it's a catch-all word that you can just go, oh, rat. And everyone knows exactly what you mean. It's sometimes rat's good, sometimes rat's bad. You know, it's a catch-all multi-purpose word.
It's like the C word for me. I get it.
I think so. And do you call it the C word every time?
No, I call it.
Oh, I call it C word.
I call it proper, but occasionally I have said it on this podcast. I say it all the time in real life. But I'm aware, I keep being told that in America people lose their mind if you say it. So I feel like you need to be in my presence for me to use it in such a way that will make you feel warm and loved.
Have you tried it in America yet? Have you like?
I have got a routine about it, which I did try recently. And I did think this is really it. This is, I'm either deported or not. And it worked. But,
great.
You know, there's a lot of preamble. There's a lot of teaching, you know. I'm trying to teach. First we bring football to America. Next we bring camp.
Yeah. That would be really nice to be able to just, you know, walk into any given Chili's and just go, all right, cunt.
Hello, cunt. Do Crystal Palace know you? As in, you know, you're a big deal these days. Have you, like, been invited to inner sanctum? Have you been invited on the pitch at Crystal Palace?
I haven't been invited to the inner sanctum. And I really do hope it happens. But I'm not going to push that. Because I think let them come. Let them come when they're ready. But I think the thing is as well, like, that kind of stuff doesn't really matter to me because I get so much enjoyment out of it as a fan that, like, anything above that would be an added extra. And I also think that, like, you know, in our line of work, particularly in your line of work, Brett, you're around superstars constantly and you sort of have to learn you have to learn how to be chill, you know, calm. Oh, look, it's Harry Styles over there. I'm not going to lose my mind. And I think I've got that with, like, lots of big celebrities. But if I met the Crystal Palace football team, I would lose my fucking mind, I swear to you. And it's pathetic. I'm 29 years old and I'd be, like, weeping because, like, my 19-year-old hero is stood in front of me. It's pathetic. But I would love it so much. Have you met them all?
I haven't met all the players at Crystal Palace, no. But I've been through their lockers. I've taken all their stuff.
Oh, he's having a little rifle, is he?
I've seen what deodorant they wear and now I wear it. Oh, yeah. Fuck, Chloe Petz, I forgot to tell you something at the beginning.
Oh, what now?
It's not rat. I remembered rat. It's you've died. You're dead.
Oh, yeah.
Dead. The fuck.
Now, see, I listened to a couple of episodes of this and every time you've forgotten the sort of major...
Oh, really?
Yeah. The Kerry Godleyman episode, you were like, I forgot to tell you, you're dead.
Oh.
Do you do that every week?
I mean, it's good to know that you're a huge fan of the show.
Is that the contrivance that you forgot to tell me?
Contrivance, how dare you? I genuinely have a memory disorder. And every week, I can't even remember if I remember every week. But sure, it's
so
possible this has happened before, but you are dead. Contrivance. You are booted up. You're right. You may not even get into heaven for that. Tell me this. How did you die?
Well, this is the thing. In life, what I think, what I'd really like is, have you seen The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, that film?
The second big budget Narnia film.
Yeah.
Is that the one with Will Poulter in it?
Yes. Reaper Cheap, the little rat. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, maybe that's why I like it so much. He walks, the way he dies is he just walks sort of through this big wave. And I've always said to my mum, like, I wish that's how we could sort of go. Like, I'd like it to be the end of my life, the end of my life when I'm ready to go. All of the people that I've loved, all the pets that I've loved will never die. We all just stand on the edge of this wave and go, we're ready now. And then we walk into the wave. That's my dream. But I genuinely think the way that I will die is, you know, I think the funniest time in my life is, you know, when you do one bodily function, like you sneeze and then it induces a fart.
The double up.
I think if I ever accidentally sneezed, farted, and then coughed, if I added a third one in, I think my body would just cop it. So I think ideally through a lovely wave with all my loved ones, but I think in reality it would be a fart, sneeze, cough hybrid.
Well, there's a lot going on here because you're taking your loved ones with you when you die. You're not like dying on your own. Have you seen Deep Impact?
I actually haven't, no.
Deep Impact, spoiler, I'm afraid, Taya Leone, you know, it's the end of the world coming, whatever, a meteor hits, and she and her father stand on the beach and like hold each other as a giant tidal wave sort of just goes over them. Is that your dream? Is that how you're, is that what we're saying here?
No.
Or you're walking towards the tidal wave?
It's just like a big like wall of sea, and on the other side is the other side. It's not
now
like...
I absolutely love the sea and would very happily die in the sea.
Yeah.
The thing I'm just sort of looking at is once you step into that wall of sea, which is beautiful, you are going to drown.
No, there is a bit of drowning. No. I'm not going to drown. It's magical sea. What you're missing is it's magical sea. And it's a bit like, you know, this is a really big spoiler. If you haven't watched The Good Place, then skip 30 seconds and go and watch it and then watch the ending. You know, in The Good Place when they all walk through to the other side at the end?
I mean...
It's like that. You walk through to the other side. There's no pain. And I think the thing you said with Deep Impact and sort of the thing a bit like that recent film Don't Look Up, where they sort of try and have this like, you know, nice meal and ape-like domestic reality... Stuff like that is, I find it so tragic because there's no choice in that. They've accepted their fate. And I think that that's really moving. But I think I would need to be like, I'm done now. I'm ready. And I think that that's my greatest like existential crisis is that like I might be ripped from life before it's time by farting to death.
So this is your worry about death is you could cough, sneeze and fart too soon.
Yeah.
Is that how you worry about this stuff? Do you, how often are you worrying about?
Constant.
Really? Has it always been that way?
No, I had a bit of a reckoning with it in my early 20s where I was like, oh shit, this actually won't last forever. And I think my issue is that I enjoy everything so much. I'm just constantly having such a nice time. And, you know, even when bad things happen, I'm sort of like, the good times will come again. And then it's like one day the good times won't, one day it will just, my time will be done and I won't like get to, you know, hang out and do a podcast with Brett, you know, get locked in Ed Gamble's hotel room. The greatest tragedy to me is that one day I won't know who wins the Premier League.
God, yeah. Can I ask, unless it's too dark, and if it is, we can move on. You don't want to talk about it. What did something happen in your early 20s when you say you had this reckoning, or was it just a thought?
Nothing like traumatic or anything. It was, I think I had that sort of realization that humans might sort of be grinding ourselves into like an apocalypse or like an early ending to humanity. And I think the thing that I always took solace in was that even if I died, the thing that I was part of, the team that I was on, humans, even if I wasn't remembered individually, we would always live on. And the thing that I was part of would always be remembered. And I think when I had this existential anxiety that like one day the human race might not be here, who's going to remember all of the things we did, all of those amazing things? That was when I had my sort of personal crisis of like, oh fuck, this is finite, you know? So I think it was like the macro level of realization influenced the micro level of like my mortality.
Interesting. What do you think happens when you die? Nothing. What do you think, there's an afterlife?
No, I don't mean there's an afterlife. I think it's just a sort of return to dust, you know?
With no consciousness, like in terms of what you're experiencing, it's you walk into that wall of sea, cough, sneeze and fart, and then...
Done.
Blackout.
Gone.
Done.
Yeah. I think it's like just sleeping forever.
But sleeping. I dreamt I smoked a cigar last night. Do you know what I mean? That's nothing.
Very cool, actually. Yeah. Nah. Do you think there's an afterlife?
I do, yeah.
Really? I'd like to.
Well, I don't think that there's nothing. I think that whatever it is, you know what? If you want to talk film, I think it is what Soul says it is, the Pixar film Soul.
Soul, right.
I think it's...
I haven't actually seen it. And I think I purposefully have sort of stayed clear of it because I have such like existential anxiety around death that if I could... it could just catch me at the wrong time and send me spiraling. So stuff like that, I'm always a bit careful of.
I understand that. The message of Soul you seem to have already picked up, though, so perhaps you're okay.
Okay. Maybe it'll be helpful to me.
I think so, yeah. Well, listen, big news, Chloe Petz. There is a heaven. And you know what it is? I'm not even asking the question I normally ask. You know what heaven is? It's Selhurst Park. It's Selhurst Park, and you are welcome there. And the whole team are there. They are delighted to see you. They want to know your thoughts on every game they've ever played. They want to talk to you about everything, but they want to thank you, but they also want to talk to you about your life through film.
Mm.
First question they ask you, this is the manager, says, Chloe Petz, what's the first film you remember seeing?
Well, when I was like really small, maybe like 4 or 5 or something, I got obsessed with the film Sleeping Beauty. And I think I watched it every day for 2 months. And then
the Disney film rather than the weird sexy sex film.
I don't think it was the weird sexy sex film, Brett, when I was 4. But, you know, it could have been irresponsible parenting.
Yeah, this could have been where the existential crisis came from.
What's the weird sexy sex Sleeping Beauty?
There's a weird film with, I haven't seen it, but it is about a sort of man who pays a woman to sleep and he watches her and maybe does stuff with her. I don't know, but his thing is, she has to be asleep.
Okay. And instead of waking her with a kiss, he wakes her with a willy.
I don't even know if he does willy. He just watches it. I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to it. But I do know it sounded odd and was considered odd. But I also thought, it exists. Good luck to it.
My watch list thus far is Soul and Sexy Sleeping Beauty. That's my double header for this evening. it's the Disney film. I was genuinely too young to be able to remember what I was getting from it. And I also think I can't really remember the plot of it that much. So I was that young that even though I watched it every day for 2 months, it sort of isn't there deeply in like my memory. So I sort of retroactively have to think what I was getting from it. And the scene that sticks in my mind is the prince chopping through the forest of like thorny things. And I think I was quite taken by like the notion of like very beautiful men saving women.
I like that.
That's bad, isn't it?
I don't see why that is bad. What's wrong with a beautiful man saving a woman?
Yeah, by kissing her on the lips without asking her.
Yes, the way he goes about it isn't ideal, sure.
I think I just tried nudging her first.
You're right. You're right.
Babe,
you're
wake up.
You're dreaming of cigars again. Come on.
Come on, you're having a bad dream about cigars. If you wake up, you could have an actual real cigarette. Just one.
Yeah. Listen, wake up, I've got a pack of 20 here.
I've got a pack of 20 Camels. We'll go down the turret and we'll smoke them outside.
Listen, honestly, I don't want to like guilt you into this, but I've just chopped up so many thorns to get here. Wake up. Come on, babe.
I'm actually bleeding. Can you just...
Listen, look, open your eyes. I am a beautiful man, apparently. Come on. I think you'll be...
I'm stunning and I've got cigarettes. Okay? Yeah, that's probably what he should have done.
Yeah.
But instead, he just went for a smacker on the lips.
Weird when you think about it, isn't it? I mean, it's not... Well, it is a proper kiss, thinking about it. It isn't like a little just a peck. He really holds it until she opens her eyes.
I wonder what the, you know, etymology or history of, like, true love's first kiss is. Where has that come from?
Mm.
Why are we so obsessed with that? And I guess it's probably to do with, like, chastity and...
Go on.
And, like, saving yourself for... true love's first kiss. Like, don't waste it. Do you know what I mean? It's another form of sort of keeping women...
It's a control.
Yeah, controlled.
So we should, in fact, kiss everyone.
Yeah.
We should be kissing everyone.
True love's 2649th first kiss. Yeah.
I totally agree. Did you watch this on your own? Do you have siblings? Did you watch this with your family?
No, I watched this with my mum. I think it was... Like when dad was at work, my brother had just started school. So it was just me at home on my own with my mum. And then I remember I'm pretty sure that I'd make her sort of act out the film after we'd watch it with like my Barbies and Action Men and stuff, which is quite like, it's quite like a psychologically like interesting thing. Why was it that was, because I can't remember why, as I say, why I was so interested in it, but it grabbed me. I also think like, the aesthetic is like there's something like a little bit uncanny to those old.
Yeah.
Those old Disney films. I hear you. And I think I found I've always liked films that are sort of a bit like quietly haunting, like a bit odd. Like I really love like Coraline stuff in that sort of aesthetic love where it's Coraline. A bit like a bit weird.
You know what? The way they animated those films. Have you ever seen it where they have like the five plates of glass?
I don't think
that?
I have. No.
So there's maybe part of the uncanny thing is there's almost like a 3D effect. They would have the camera over. I'm trying to describe it so that if you're listening, this will make sense. They had the camera over like five plates of glass with a gap between them. And on the first plate of glass might be the trees. And on the second plate of glass might be her. And then the third plate of glass might be the moon and behind that cloud. So that shooting through those glass gives you a sense of depth and 3D. Do you know what I mean?
That's incredible. That's really cool. Particularly like when you know that in relation to like what the film's about and it's like essentially the end just becomes empty. Mm. So to like have those like multi-layers just like stripped of anything. Oh, really cool.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
What is the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared, Chloe Pets?
Yes, I do like getting really scared. If you could do some tiny boos during this, then I would love it. Yeah, but not too hard because I might sneeze, cough, fart myself to death. But I'm already dead, so I guess you can't die twice.
Yeah.
Well, yes, I do. I think latterly I've really enjoyed being scared. And I think when I was younger, I equated being scared with gore. So I had like such a low threshold for gore that even if mum or dad sort of channel flicked onto Casualty, I'd be like, oh no, I can't see that grey's knee. But I sort of open myself up to it. But I guess sort of this new wave of like, what do they even call it? Like, I think it's quite like psychological horror and stuff like that.
I think they call it elevated horror or
elevated
something.
Horror, which feels like which is so rude. Like snobby, given that, you know, horror has always been great now that I sort of have looked into it and know about it. But yeah, so latterly, I really do love it. And I couldn't sort of tie it down, but things that I've loved are The Babadook, Get Out and Us, Hereditary. And then I think sort of getting a ground in that and sort of working out like the formula to fear. I think sometimes if I need the sting taken out of it because I'm getting too scared, then I can be like, oh, the sensation that I'm having is like just the different side of like the laughter coin, because it's that like tension, release thing. And I think even stuff like then watching stuff like Midsommar after watching Hereditary, I was just like laughing the whole way through Midsommar because I was like, oh, this is like a sort of parody or pastiche of like how far can we push this like craziness? Yeah.
Do you know the thing I'm sorry if I've said this before, I might have done, but not for like 100 episodes. Is
it rap?
No. Do you know this about Midsommar? Is that the festival that they're at in Midsommar is I believe it's a 9-day festival, and the end of the film is only like day 4. So you're sort of left with, Jesus Christ, what the fuck happens on day 8?
I did not know that. That's so cool.
Yeah. It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, and because I guess it's like that ramping up, the unrelentingness of like another thing happening. So yeah, the I guess the gag of there still being five more days of that is really funny.
Is that your answer, Midsommar?
No, I think I wasn't scared at Midsommar. I think maybe like the Babadook, probably, because I guess it's that like quite sweet portrayal of grief. And again, aesthetically, I think it's really beautifully and smartly shot in like a really purposeful way. Like sometimes I think filmmakers will choose a certain aesthetic because it looks nice, but this felt like it really complemented the content and enriched the content. And I think I'm a massive Mark Kermode fan. He's like my favourite, I think, man, because he does that thing that I think all men should do, which is like he'll sort of give a review of a film and then he'll be like, but what do I know? I'm just a straight white man. and I think that's great. And I recently, like, he's been talking about being in CBT on Kermode and Mayo. He's been talking about being in CBT for his anxiety. And I'm like, babes, don't fix the anxiety. Like, that's making
why
you...
That's fancy you.
No, that's what's making you sort of a nice white man is, like, the feeling of doubt. Keep it, babes. Yeah. But he always talks about, and I guess this is, like, the elevated horror or like psychological horror trope of the scariest things are the things that we sort of recognize in ourselves or like recognizing in experiences that we've had. And I think the Babadook is like an amazing example of that, of like manifesting physically a psychological anxiety that we have. And I think what I loved about it is like, do you ever see the Babadook in the film? Because I know that you do in the short film, but I can't remember if you do in the long film.
It's a great question. I think you see, do you ever see it fully? Maybe you never see it completely fully, but you see bits of it.
Yeah, but I think that's so smart of just like almost like microdosing or like edging us with the Babadook. is like that's what's scary about it is you don't need to see the thing that's just off camera, because the human mind is going to create something worse than you ever could. And in the short film, you do see the Babadook fully. And I think that's amazing because it looks so stupid and so silly, this thing that has been terrorizing them. And it really works because she's going, I'm not scared of you anymore. You get out of this room. You stop terrorizing me and my son, and you never do this again. And you can live downstairs. We can live in harmony, but you're not going to terrorize me. And the fact that that's the moment that we see this Babadook and we just go, you're laughable now, is such a strong moment in film. I think I've got little tingles even thinking about it.
That's great. What is the film that made you cry the most, Chloe Petz?
Okay.
You a crier?
Oh, Brett, am I a crier? Oh my
are you
God.
A crier?
Yeah, I'm a big crier. I won't stop crying.
Yeah,
sometimes it's not even because I feel sad that I cry. It's if I can't process the beauty of something, it will sort of manifest as crying. And I had that with the film Les Miserables when I was in my early 20s. It came out when I was at uni. From the moment that Jean Valjean was given the sort of goods from the church till the end of the film, I sobbed. And I saw that film 3 times in the cinema, and every time it was the same thing, I was just sobbing. And I don't know what you think of that film, but I think it's brilliant. And I loved the smallness of it in comparison to the stage version. I think that's the way to adapt sort of quite an emotional musical, is he pared everything down, and and the big moments were on the actors' faces, and they were singing it live. It wasn't like it was put in post. I just thought it was brilliant. And all of that content gets me. I think maybe that's the way I'd like to die, dying for my cause.
Dying during a revolution?
Yeah, viva la revolution.
What's your cause that you're dying for?
Maybe a nice...
You're really passionate about this.
Nice bit of...
we will fight for...
nice bit of climate activism.
There you go. Lovely. Yeah, you're right about that. It is a good the move on the Les Mis film that you can't do in a stage show is you did massive close-ups. That was the move. It's like, here's what you can't see if you're watching a stage show, is their faces really, really close.
And I think that's what I find most affecting, is I don't find like big, bold breast stuff. It's when you can see the like the raw emotion. Can I just give some honourable mentions to the other films that have made me cry the most? Because my dad laughed at this quite a lot. I went to see Mamma Mia 2 with my dad.
Oh, yeah, nothing wrong with that.
And my mum. My mum was next to me, and that was what got me. Because, spoiler, another spoiler, Meryl Streep is both a slag and she dies, right, in Mamma Mia 2.
She's a dead slag.
She's a dead slag. But my mum was sat next to me.
That's the synopsis.
Dead slag. mum was sat there next to me. Mm. Amanda Seyfried's coming onto the screen getting married and her mum's not there. Of course I'm going to absolutely, wet myself from the eyes.
Yeah.
But then I turned to my dad and I said, that is overtaken as the most I've ever cried at a film. And he said, what was the most you've ever cried at a film before? And I said, 12 Years a Slave, which as a sort of dichotomy of films that I've cried at is they're on different levels, you know?
More moved by a dead slag than the history of slavery in America.
Chloe Petz for you.
That's Chloe Petz for you. What is a film? You love it. People don't like it. It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it.
I've got two ones for this. I've got Escape Plan. Have you seen that one?
Great answer. Schwarzenegger, Stallone, prison.
It's Say fucking no great. More. I've seen it so many times. It's just thrilling and exciting and camp. Yeah. I love when big manly men films are meant to be big and manly, but they're so big and manly that they become so camp.
So Escape Plan, what was your other answer?
Jupiter Ascending.
Great answer.
I fucking great love answer. The way Eddie Redmayne chews the scenery in that film. Yeah. I just think he's so... Yeah, I just think...
But he's taking a big swing.
Yeah, and why did no one stop him? Because they knew that it's great.
Yeah, that's a film full of big swings, though.
So many big swings.
Channing Tatum's a fox dog or something. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a lot of telling, not showing of... Is it Mila Kunis?
Mila Kunis, yeah.
The bee is just following her because she's the queen. Great. Wonderful. And yeah, I think films like that I know have been sort of roundly panned, I have to put my sort of critical... faculties aside and just be like, did I check my watch at any point in that film and was I just having the most thrilling, brilliant time ever? Yes, is the answer. And I get that with all of the Wachowski films. I'm like, I will 100% go and see every Wachowski film in the cinema because I'm like, this is going to be fun. It's the same thing with M. Night Shyamalan. I'm never unentertained. Sometimes I'm like, what the fuck? But I will always go and see them.
I really liked Old.
I thought it was great.
I thought it's so many good ideas in it, and he's a good director.
Maybe too many good ideas. I think
you've got too many ideas, mate. Rein them in.
Save them. Save them for different films. It was sort of like, oh, we're doing this now. Like only 3 minutes have passed. Blimmin' heck. M. Night.
What is a film you used to love? You loved it, but you've watched it recently and you do not love it anymore. For whatever reason. Could be political, could be personal, could be you've just got older. What is it?
Brett, I honestly, this one I found so hard. Oh, I don't
that's good.
Have a good...
You don't change.
I'm unchanging. No, I don't have a good answer for you. I do think one of the films that I watched recently was just like, what the actual fuck? Why did this get all of the acclaim? Is Heat.
big talk. Go on.
It's really big talk and I feel like reticent to say it because I feel
okay.
But it's one of those things where if you say it, the film bros will come at you on Twitter and be like, it's one of the best films in the whole entire world.
Mm-hmm. I don't have film bro listeners, don't worry.
You're old, fine. Just little gentlemen.
Just gentlemen. Gentlemen, gentlewomen and people who, you don't get film bro hate on this.
Okay,
I think you're safe.
I think it's my issue with it is thus. I was really perturbed by the display of masculinity in it and all of the sort of classic tropes around beautiful women as love interests and I'm pretty sure, I can't really remember, but dead women, the way that they were treating that, I was just like, this is fucked up. And I get that it was meant to be sort of a criticism and not a satire, but a sort of look at that society and critique it. But I do sometimes think there's an element of even displaying it on screen in that way is glamorizing it.
I hear you. Totally hear you. And I wouldn't argue against that. I think there's always that danger of anything. It was the big criticism with Wolf of Wall Street is that it's anti what it's showing, but it's showing it and it looks so fun. Looks fun. And
yeah,
I get it. I hear you. I think I listened to a big interview with Michael Mann about Heat recently on the Mark Maron podcast. And Michael Mann is so intelligent and put so much thought into it. And Heat is based on real people. And so I hear you. I think it's a very, and he's exploring all the things that you're talking about. But you're right. He also makes it look fucking cool.
So yeah, I hear you. I guess it's that like argument of how something like exists in its reception. Because it's like, I don't know. I don't know why this has popped into my head, but like Al Murray is like the great one of the greatest comic characters of all time. But some people, you know, will sit there and think it's what he's saying is dead serious, that he does think Meghan Markle's the root of all evil. And so, yeah, I guess my discomfort sits in the reception of it and the way that film bros might be like, yeah, this looks fucking great. But maybe I think I'll go back to it and maybe I'll listen to that big interview. And we can do a reunion in 10 years' time.
Okay. What is the film that means the most to you? Not because the film itself is any good, maybe, but the experience you had seeing it makes special.
I actually had one idea for this, and then I...
So you need.
I've forgotten. What is that film called? Oh, Rocks. It's called Rocks.
Love Rocks.
It's great so film. Good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I never go to the toilet during a film because...
That's rude.
Because it's rude and then I'm like a completist. If I feel like I've gone to the toilet, then I feel like I've missed it. And I'm like, well, we need to start again because I don't know what's happened. But I went to see Rocks and I've subsequently watched it since. So I know what happens. I know what I missed. But it was because it was like my third date with my girlfriend. And I got so nervous about trying to hold her hand that I had to go to the toilet and sort myself out. And then when I got back, I was like, I can't do it. And then she took my hand.
Come on.
It was really nice. Because I'm used to sort of, I've always been in relationships where it's been messing around with like gender and stuff. It's been more like the masculine one and the feminine one. So I've always like made the first move. And it was just really nice to like be like, oh, she really likes me. She's held my hand.
That's so nice.
And the film was great.
Are you still together?
We're still together. Girlfriend. Yeah.
That is a very nice story, Chloe Petz.
Thank you.
Really good. I hope you didn't kiss her during the film, though, because people kissing in films is like, I'm a completist. If you kissed in the film, then you have to restart the film.
I think you're right. And also, I wouldn't have felt comfortable doing big snogging and watching loads of teenagers. Oh, yeah. These traumatized teens are really getting me going.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's kiss. Okay. Yeah. Big moves. Big move taking your lady to the cinema as well. Because how much of the film are you taking in? How much of your brain is just worrying about holding her hand? You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. But that's why I've had to go back and watch it. It very much stood up. Like, I think it's quality. I think it's really good. I really love those films where I'm pretty sure she got like non-trained actors and stuff from...
Yes, she did, yeah.
From the backgrounds of... depicting. And I think that that's always really cool when you see the lines of like fiction and reality are blurred and you get like these really sort of like quite honest, truthful performances.
Yeah, it's great. What is the film you most relate to?
Possibly Lady Bird.
You know, that's also my answer and I believe Nish's answer.
Really?
You can have Lady Bird. I mean, you're correct.
Sorry if that I've... Is there a correct answer to all of these?
What are the correct answers?
Are you marking me? At the end, you'll be like, 12 out of 12. Well done.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful. I think Greta Gerwig, like, is one of our best filmmakers currently living. And her oeuvre will be, like, huge and so remembered. I think that feeling of, like, just from the opening sequence where they're arguing in the car is something that I just recognize in like teens and their mothers, and it's so beautifully observed of just like, what are we even arguing about? We're just arguing, and it doesn't matter the content. It's just, I'm going to bicker because you are this authority figure that is actively working to ruin my life. And yeah, it's just so beautifully touching. What's your take on it?
I just really felt like Lady Bird.
Yeah.
Every aspect of her, I was like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
And it's always the thing for any writer or anything is like, it's so specific. It's specific to the town she's from. It's specific to the year, to the music, to everything. And the more specific you are, the more universal you are. As in, I am not from there and I am not a girl. But boy, did I think, this is me.
That's great.
You know what I mean?
And I love that. I was going to say, like, it felt like quite singular in its depiction of teenage girls, but I'm so glad that that sort of transcends the sort of gender binary, and also, like, I think says lovely things about you and Nish, that you are like soft little boys,
soft ladybirds,
soft little ladybirds. But even that thing of like her wanting to be called Ladybird is like so great. Of like, I want to put words on what I feel, but I don't quite have the words, so I've chosen Ladybird feels right, expressing the inexplicable.
God, it's brilliant. The end is so brilliant. Anyway, what is the sexiest film you've ever seen, Chloe Pets?
It's Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
That is a sexy film.
Thwarted lesbianism.
Delicious.
The thing about that one is Celine Siamar is, like, I think, probably my favourite filmmaker at the moment.
Good choice.
And I think the moment for me about that is because it's all about, like, the female gaze, and the female gaze, like, out of the view of the male gaze. Like, they sort of create this, like, female utopia. And there's, like, this, all of this tension of, like, looking and being observed and not realising that you're being observed, but realising you're observing, all of that kind of stuff. The moment that I found that, you know, the building tension of sexiness, like, it's building, the, are they going to kiss, aren't they? It wasn't released in that film when they kissed. There's a moment when they're walking down to the beach together, and I'm pretty sure it's, what's her name? Adele Hanel reaches out and takes Noemi Merlant's hand, and they just brush hands. And for me, that was...
Like you at the cinema.
Oh! They're like, oh, I've just come moment. You know? Oh, yeah. It was great. It was amazing. Yeah.
What a wonderful film. There's a subcategory, troubling boners, worrying wide ones. Film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should. And is it rocks?
Traumatised teens, do it for me. No,
what was your answer?
Is there a no context feels to be buried with Twitter account? Because if there is, I think that might be a quote on there.
No, there isn't. You're safe for now. No film brides and no context.
My first ever sex dream was about Ursula from The Little Mermaid.
Nice choice. Interesting. Tells us a lot.
What does it tell us?
Tells us your type. Octopus.
Big lady octopus.
Big Lady Octopus, yeah.
That's what, when I walk through the big wave to die, that's what I think's on the other side. Big Lady Octopus waiting for me.
Big Lady Octopus, belter as well.
I just think I think there's,
she's funny.
She'd tell me what to do. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't have to think about it. And there's like a safety in that.
Yeah. She'd make sort of deals with you that are slightly, turn out to be sort of a bit trickery, is a bit tricky. You sort of realise, oh, there was a sub clause to the deal I just made with you that I hadn't really thought about.
But it's hot, but so I'm happy. I'll let it go. Yeah. You know, who needs their own voice?
100%. What is objectively the greatest film of all time?
I can't believe you've asked me this question.
It's a simple question. Objectively, it's not your favourite. It's the greatest pinnacle of cinema.
You must get all of the generic answers to this, you know, your Godfathers, your that sort of thing, your Goodfellas. For me, I think Seven.
Wonderful.
It's got everything. And I think even in the, like, it feels like it's kind of like one of those films like pre the internet, almost. Like, not pre the internet, but like pre the internet in its form now, where they were able, or like, free the way that they do like PR and advertising for films, that they could keep Kevin Spacey off the list of stars in it, so that when Kevin Spacey, and I didn't know he was in it, when he turned up, I was like, you fucking what?
Yeah.
It's Kevin fucking Spacey? Are you serious? And like, it's very rare that films can do that now, because I feel like we've seen so much of the mechanics of how films work. And it's almost like when I saw like Shutter Island for the first time, I was like, I can't fucking believe this. This is crazy. But then when I saw Memento, I was like, oh yeah, I kind of saw that happen, coming, because like I knew sort of how twists work now. Whereas Seven, like, profoundly, like, grabbed me. And it also had that quality of, I'm not looking at my watch. I'm just, I'm barreling through the next thing. And then I think the greatest endings of all are the endings that you don't want. You absolutely, it can't be that. It can't be. But they are so inevitable in the world of the film that they couldn't be anything else. And Seven is the master of that, of like, oh no, it can't be a head in the box, but there's no other way of them getting out of it. Oh, wonderful.
Brilliant, brilliant answer. It's never come up. You are correct. What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
Well, this is, I'm going to go a little edgy indie for you.
Okay.
Have you seen the film Baccarat?
Is that the police in a nightclub film?
No, I don't think so. It's Brazilian.
yes.
There might have been some police in a nightclub, but I don't think so. And it basically starts in this like Brazilian town where the dam's been blocked. So water's not getting to the town, and this mayor's sort of coming round, and he's like going, look, vote for me, I'll sort the water. But that this town is just like completely suffering. But it's like got this interesting vibe of like sort of like community, like quite sex positive in like a weird way. And you think it's sort of going to be one film, which is like this political look at, you know, the political turmoil in Brazil at the moment. And then it turns into a different film. It shifts into a different gear where basically like these white people turn up in the town. And there's like other things going on where like the town now can't access Wi-Fi, like they're sort of off the grid, and they like disappear on a map. And then basically it turns out that this town, that like a group of rich white people have paid to hunt them. And it's the slow revelation of that. Again, it sort of quite blindsided me, and I don't want to give away the ending, but it satisfied me in a way that I need endings to satisfy me, for me to like be able to watch that film over and over and over again. Like, I don't think I could watch Seven over and over and over again, because I couldn't cope with the unrelenting, like, oh fuck, her head's still in the box. Whereas this one, I'm like, I think this is going to turn out all right.
Really interesting answer. Now, we don't like to be too negative, Chloe Pett, so we'll be quick. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
We're not going to be quick. I'm fucking fuming about this one. Annette.
How dare you?
Well, yeah.
I love Annette.
You have to tell me why you love Annette. I was so angry about it. I felt like the film critics were gaslighting me.
You, listen, as someone who likes the Wachowskis, Annette is big swing after big swing after big swing. Here's a wooden baby puppet. Here's Adam Driver singing into Marianne Cotillard's vagina. Here's everyone addressing camera. Here's the writers popping up at the beginning. Here's a fake sea. Here's a floating wooden baby in the sky. It's a swing, swing, swing film.
Nah, it just, like, it's a fucking, like murder fantasy. Why did Marion Cotillard have to be like killed off so fucking early? And then it's just like she's completely voiceless.
Listen, I apologize for this, but I'm going to have to disagree with you. She's not voiceless. Her voice is the whole point, is that
it lives on through
a net. But her voice is, she literally goes, I will haunt you, Henry, I will haunt you. And her voice is all through the film. And then the wooden baby has her voice. The point is, you can't get rid of her voice. You've tried to, but you can't.
Yeah, but why does... I just hated it. I just thought it was fucking shit. And like, I can see that. I can see that what you've said is right, but I was just like, this is... like, I'm angry at this. I have to sit through this bullshit. And like, the campness was just a bit wide of the mark. Like, when she gets to... she's singing at like that big sports event or something. And then she goes, like, my daddy killed people. Shut up. I don't care about you. And I think Kermode actually loved it. And he said that maybe this is why I've read it in a different way. Because I think if I'd gone in with the expectation of what you'd said, then maybe I would have enjoyed it a bit more, because I would have watched it a bit more tongue in cheek. But he read it as a very serious film and, you know, a very sort of, he was like, you know, even though she was a puppet, I sort of connected with her and like believed in this relationship, and I just didn't believe in it whatsoever. And he also said like the songs were like earworms, and I was sort of like, well, you know, I know a song that will get on your nerves is also an earworm. It doesn't make it good. you're sort of ramming your message down my throat. Anyway, piss me off, sorry.
You're in comedy, you're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
Oh, I think I'm doing a companion piece here, Superbad and Booksmart. Mm-hmm. In yeah, sort of
really, really good. Really good double bill.
I watched Superbad so late and I was like, obviously knew loads of the quotes from it and was sort of ready to be quite unimpressed and just be like, oh, you know, this is something that you know, teenagers just quote at each other and it's not clever or funny. But the McLovin scene where he gets the... It's just so funny. I was like really sort of uncontrollably crying with laughter. Booksmart, I think, is like, you know, the girls' version of it. And I just love their relationship so much where they're like, they're just so into each other. And I think that's very recognisable for females and women friendships. And that sort of had me like rolling with laughter. So for me, I think I need to be like rolling with laughter through the whole film and also be able to remember like really clear set pieces. So I thought it was so smart when it went into like stop motion animation when they were on drugs or something. And then when they come out of it and you see them like walking as themselves, like they're still in stop motion. And then also like when Caitlin Dever's character is in the bathroom of that really hot girl and she accidentally like puts her finger in the wrong hole. It's just so funny. Yeah.
It's a fucking great film, that is. Chloe Petz, you have been a dream. A dream in which I smoke a cigar. Now.
Yo! Lovely!
You've also got 40 points.
40?
Yes. Wow. However, when you gathered all your loved ones, there was a big wave coming, and you said, let's go for a swim, and you walked towards this big wave, and you all looked at each other and smiled, and as you did, you sneezed, farted, and coughed, and your loved ones went, Jesus Christ, and you laughed so much that you took, as the wave hit you, you took such an in gulp of water, it immediately filled your lungs exploded, your heart exploded, you were dead. Anyway, I'm walking past the beach, you know what I'm like, I've got a coffin with me, as per, and I see your bloated corpse, absolutely filled with water. It's about five times the size that I was expected. Just rocks up on the beach like a whale, like a dead whale. And I head over to it. I'm like, oh, Chloe Petz, this is not what I was expecting. And so I get your loved ones. None of them died. And I say, can you help with this? They go, yeah, sure. They'll get bits of wood. They stab you to water gushing out everywhere, all this. Anyway, we chop you up. I do what I can, put everything in the coffin, but there's more of you than I was expecting, what with all the seaweed and the sand you've taken in and the other fish. And there's a giant sexy lady octopus that crawls out and goes, well, that was fun. And sings, heads off, and makes some deals. Anyway, you're in the coffin. It's absolutely jammed in there. There is only enough room in this coffin for me to slip one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And in heaven, at Soho's Park, it's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show Crystal Palace when it's movie night? Your movie night.
Lady Bird.
Great choice. And all the Crystal Palace team are going to be like, I relate.
My name is Eberici Eze and I relate.
Chloe Petz, is there anything you would like to tell people to go to? To look out for?
I would love for people to come to my tour show. It starts at the Soho Theatre in early January of 2023. And then I'm going sort of all around the country from February to April. And I think it will be really, really fun. And I would love to, for your little woke gentlemen, your soft ladies and your rock-hard non-binary people to come and see it.
I think that they all should.
Thanks.
Chloe Petz, I have loved this. Thank you for your time. Have a wonderful life.
Thank you, mister.
Good day to you.
Good day!
So that was episode 225. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets, beginnings, endings, and video with Chloe. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but don't talk about the show. Talk about a film that means the most to you and why. Just for my neighbour Maureen. She loves reading them. It makes her cry. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. I hope that everything is good in your world. Thank you so much to Chloe for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lytham for the photography. Come and join me next week for another cracking guest. It's a very good one next week. Oh, you're going to like that one. Yes, you are. So that is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant.
Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.